right. 99.5 KKLA FM Los Angeles, the intersection of faith and reason right here at the Frank Pastore Show. And welcome aboard. So let me ask you a question. Back in the Old Testament, do you think they needed biblical counselors? You think people were a little bit different than they are today, that they didn't have nearly the problems that we do today, and therefore, because we're more developed, for some reason, we need more highly trained specialists, and we need all of the, all of these psychiatrists and psychologists. You know, has human nature fundamentally changed over time to where now God is providing us all of these, quote, experts to address specific problems, or have we gotten away from what the intended plan was? Let me ask the same question a different way. Do you think God's intent for the church is that, much like you need pastors and apologists, you need psychologists and psychiatrists? Well, and then medical professionals and doctors, right? Okay, so it's difficult to draw the lines here. And what I'm trying to get at is the very idea that maybe part of the solution to our relational problems and the stuff that it happens, and instead of pawning it off to, quote, experts, maybe God's intent is for us to do a lot of this work ourselves. In the same way that raising children is not up to the public school, it's up to the parents, but we tend to pawn off a lot of the responsibility. Maybe it's our responsibility as the local church to have a skill set of learning how to, well, deal with the wounds and the stuff that happens within our fellowships and within community. I want you to meet Dr. Jim Wilder, who I've had on the show a handful of times now, and I'm falling in love with this whole idea because no one else has said it quite the way that Dr. Wilder has. He is a clinical psychologist, and he's a neurotheologian. I think that term is going to become pretty standard in the marketplace now, because what he does is Jim takes church-based biblical counseling, right, and biblical counseling in general, and blends it with brain science. And so it's the intersection of brain science and biblical counseling and spiritual formation and all that thrown in. And he's written a number of books, including the book that has launched an entire church-based counseling movement. It's called The Life Model, Living from the Heart That Jesus Gave You. And I love having Dr. Wilder on, because there are so many of you who know that something's missing in your Christian life. One of the things that Jim laid out on an earlier show was, basically, there are so many people, I want to say in the suburbs, who are bored with their spiritual life, and they're just wondering if there's more. And the answer is they're not involved and they're not serving. When you're wounded and broken, you know who you are. And the way that God has designed it is for, quote, the healthy to be ministering to the wounded. And in that, the healthy get a sense of fulfillment, and the wounded obviously get ministered to. And that how to do that ministering is a new counseling model, largely built on the emotion of joy, that Dr. Wilder has come up with. Dr. Wilder is hosting an upcoming conference in a couple of weeks, June 27th to the 29th at La Cañada Presbyterian Church. You've heard the commercials. It's called the Heart and Soul Conference. And there's a special dinner that I'll be emceeing on Thursday night, June 28th, out at the La Cañada Flint Ridge Country Club, honoring Dallas and his wife, Jane Willard. And Jane Willard played a huge role in Jim's development as a therapist and a counselor. And so more information on that is available at joy2thrive.com, joy2thrive.com. So, Mr. Wilder, a lot of stuff that I want to get into today. Good to see you. Happy Father's Day and all that.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to you as well.
So how is your counseling model different? Before and after kind of thing, before you appeared on the scene and put the life model together, what was the old way of, quote, doing counseling, and how have you changed that?
Well, I actually had a chance to watch it change while I was here, actually. That used to be when I first arrived in California, that the churches were really heavily involved in counseling and involved with praying with people. And then there was a lawsuit that came along about 25, 30 years ago, something like that, put the chill all the way across California, where people said, well, if we're pastors and we're churches, we can't pray with anybody who's got psychological problems. We'll have to send them to professionals so that we don't get sued. Now, okay, the whole lawsuit was resolved so that actually in favor of the church. A big church here runs a show on your program, okay, on your station twice a day. But the result of that was that the Christians seemed to have taken this turn away from being able to pray with everybody. So we're disqualified. And so the idea then was you take people and you put them in a private room with somebody who is qualified, and they talk with them there. And then when they're okay, you send them back out into the world.
Mm.
Now, the thing about that is it does work. So to start out with, I'm not saying that model doesn't work. What I am saying, though, is that you are not going to handle the problems that are running around the world with it, that kind of a solution.
Okay.
There are just way too many people getting traumatized, way too many people with addictions, way too many people depressed, way too many people with family problems, just all across the globe, and things are getting worse. We're actually losing our ability. In every major city I visit, people are having trouble figuring out how to relate to each other. Well, when we were looking at what resolves trauma, we came across an interesting thing. All traumas happen at a moment when you feel isolated and alone. And part of the resolution of all of them is to feel like I'm back connected with humanity again.
Okay.
Now, the question is, can the people around you handle what happened to you so that when you tell them about it, they don't freak and leave you alone, right?
Okay.
So then you got to find a few people who've got the capacity to listen to horrible stories all day long without getting depressed, in order to have somebody who's able to be with you in the middle of that problem. But we thought of something else along the way, you know. And this really came out of my growing up in South America during the time of persecution. Huge violence, probably 250,000 people killed.
Wow.
In the area that I was growing up, and pretty hideously. It was like the Rwanda massacre just all around the place. And, you know, it was just a time called La Violencia. It was a nasty time. And I saw people there that had been in all kinds of terrible situations becoming Christian body to support each other, where today they could be taking in the same guy that had been killing them the day before, and somehow lives were changed. They said, you know, God really can do something. What is it that makes a difference? And we've discovered, again through Jane Willard, that what really made a difference faster than anything else was experiencing God's presence. Now, God is always with us, right?
Right.
Okay. But at the time of trauma, you feel like you're totally alone. You do not know he's there.
Yeah. The who moved thing is that we sort of closed off our relational circuits and we're unaware of him.
Yeah. So what we want to do is to reactivate those and ask God the question, where were you when this thing happened?
Okay, excuse me, friend. I just want to make sure everyone gets this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's let me paraphrase. So what you've done, thanks to Jane Willard and others, and out of your own life experience, is come up with a model largely built and centered upon the emotion of joy and the presence of God,
right,
that churches can do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer the professional one-on-one in a room somewhere. It's, no, I can teach groups of people how to minister to one another so that they become, well, centers of self-propagating recovery. And you've got experience in doing this, whether it's those that have suffered with genocide, the trauma down in South America. You've flown all over the world, and you've trained groups how to deal with trauma and abuse and all the yuck stuff that has happened without the need of, quote, a professional. And it's, again, built around God's presence and the emotion of joy. And there's certain skills that you know how to train people to do to minister to one another. Fair?
Yes, very, okay. Very fair. And on top of that, I'd add, we're not even training specialized prayer teams. We're teaching people how to do this as a congregation. So they build joy in Sunday school classes. They learn how to pray, even in a group of 300 people in church at the same time, and let them privately be resolving some of the trauma issues in their life.
Okay, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want you to pick an example that you see how the church could be dealing with this if they were up and running and trained properly as a body of Christ, as the local church, to do this. Because your heart is to train churches how to do this. I mean, you're not seeing any more patients on your own. Your whole idea is to empower the churches all over the world to do this, which is the point of Heart and Soul Conference.
Right, that's
right.
So
you're taking those that have come from psychology and counseling and biblical counseling and spiritual formation and all this together. And the whole point is not to just get a handful of gifted experts on this, but to train thousands of people in the local church how to do this skill set. Now, we're not saying it's going to replace therapy or counseling or you're not going to need psychology anymore, but there's so much healing that can be done in the local church, and that's what you're trying to tap into.
Absolutely.
Okay, right. Quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Jim Wilder. Both the conference, the Heart and Soul Conference, and the dinner honoring Dallas Willard and his wife Jane coming up at the end of June. You get more information at the website joy2thrive.com. That's joy2thrive.com. I'll be the MC and would love to see you there. More with Dr. Wilder straight ahead at 99.5 KKLA. I never even thought of that. What a great idea, Producer JJ. Very good.
Because you held me tight.
All right, welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. And the reason the Heart and Soul is relevant is because there's a big conference coming up that you are invited to attend. You can get more information at joy2thrive.com. It's June 27th through the 29th at La Cañada Presbyterian Church. And then on Thursday night, very special dinner. And I have the privilege of emceeing that evening, that in which we will be honoring the life and ministry of Dallas and Jane Willard. And if you're a big fan of Dallas's, you're going to want to be there. Again, more information at joy2thrive.com. Now, the guy that's putting this whole thing together, not obviously by himself, but he's really the guy where he's the decision maker, okay, is Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist and neurotheologian. And neurotheology is simply the intersection of biblical wisdom and biblical counseling and spiritual formation with brain science. And he's melded the two, and he's traveled all over the world, get this, training groups of people how to minister more effectively to one another. Now, we're not saying have another Bible study. We're talking about villages that have dealt with genocide or horrible, horrible events and circumstances. And Jim believes that, and based upon life experience and evidence, he's come upon a model that equips groups how to minister to one another. And the vision, of course, is wouldn't it be great if the local church embraced these ideas? And so, Dr. Wilder, let me simply ask you, what does a life model church look like when it's functioning?
Well, first of all, I don't like to call anything a life model church because a church is a church. A life model is a training you can bring to help people from one generation pass on their relational skills to others that helps you connect better with God. But a church is a Christian organization. The life model is one way of equipping you with some skills you're going to need to really live that life well. It's a way of developing your maturity.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we're having this conference about spiritual maturity and emotional maturity, because the church in America over the last 200 years has neglected an awful lot of emotional maturity. We haven't really taught people how to relate to each other. We've taught people how to think straight and how to have the right theology, which is important, but it's not enough.
Right.
And as people around the world are getting less and less able to relate to each other in the big cities, they need some skills again on how to relate to each other. So we were just talking about the teaching I was doing a week ago out in a missionary school, teaching 30 missionaries how to stay relational and deal with their anger at the same time. Because your anger typically turns off your brain's relational circuits. So if you don't learn how to keep them both on, you forget you have a relationship with people every time you get angry.
Okay, run the scenario. Let's say it's either, you know, the tragedy in Kathmandu or the slaughter and the bombings that took place over the weekend in Nigeria. Let's say that you hopped on a plane and landed and something awful has happened. There's been a bombing, a school bus has been wiped out, or people have been killed at a church bombing or something like that. And you've been in those circumstances. How does what you do have an import and an impact on ministering and helping them?
Okay, here's a clear example. And one of our team was actually out at Kathmandu to the cathedral out there that was bombed in 2009. Hmm. The radicals that were against Christians in the country set off an incendiary bomb in the middle of the church service. The thing was full of gasoline and nails and stuff like that. A bunch of people got killed. It's pretty gruesome sort of a thing. And everybody in the place was showing post-traumatic stress afterwards. So Kim, one of our members of our team, by the way, he's going to be at Heart and Soul.
Great.
You could have a chance to actually talk with him, and he'll tell you about what happened here. And he's actually a physician's assistant by training. He had a week of our training, but he was the one that actually went out to Kathmandu. He said, well, let's bring everyone together that was in the church at the time the bomb went off. And so they invited them to come in, and in about 15 minutes of praying together, he starting out with, let's experience God's presence right now. You see, the thing about trauma is you feel alone, right? And the way that traditional trauma therapy has operated is that you start in the middle of the trauma and you grope around in the dark and the emotions to try to find God. But Carl Lehman, who's a psychiatrist, and I work together to look at how the brain processes trauma, and it wants to start with an attachment. Who has joy to be with me? Who loves me? Who cares about me? And what memories will connect me to that person? So we look for the strongest memories that connect you with God and say, let's start there. Let's spend a while. We'll all sit together, and instead of thinking about the awful thing, we'll think about the memories that connect us with God and with other important people in our lives.
Jim, this seems really key. I hate to interrupt, but I want to make sure I get mm-hmm. this, because I want everyone listening to get this. The old way, because I went through counseling, and I love my counselor to death. She was wonderful. Mm-hmm. She's great. Helped change my life. God changed my life through her. But the old model was, you know, how are you feeling? And then you sort of are stuck in the goo. Let's just call it the goo. Mm-hmm. You're stuck in the goo. And then if there had been a horrible thing that had happened in your past or the trauma event itself, you're in the goo going back. And then, of course, where is God and all that? But you're in the midst of the goo.
Right.
And what you've done, along with Carl, is said, well, that's not how the brain works. The brain can't, when it's in the goo, it doesn't have the relational circuits on to even begin to connect to that. Mm-hmm. That's why it was so failed, you know, it failed so often. You guys said, wait a minute, let's start positively with appreciation and joy. Get out of the goo and with God, and now your circuits are on. God is with you, and together with God, you go back and revisit the trauma, and he's already with you going back to the event.
That's right. Yeah, you're already in there. There's all kinds of interesting things, like our basic bond and attachment is down at level one of the brain, real down, deep inside. It's central to what you're even conscious of. And three levels up is where the emotions start processing through. So, you know, if you can grab a hold of God's hand or some important person's hand way down there, it anchors you to hold on for whatever else you might have to process emotionally later. So now we just started using that sort of basic principle.
All right, so
invite God into you, get connected with him. Then there's brain plasticity. The circuits that relate to people
yes.
have to be warmed up. So you're just talking about, you know, Father's Day was just now. All
yes.
all of your father's and grandfather's circuits are all warmed up. You just have to think of what you were doing over the weekend. You have this immediate feeling of, whoa, this is good.
Yep.
But if you had been off working on a problem with your transmission, all of those circuits would be dead cold, you know, and you'd turn around and say, well, how was the weekend? You go, what weekend? Where? And, you know, you'd be that distant from it. I mean, it happens to all of us. So we
right.
warm up our relational circuits, and then while they're nice and cooking, you know, then we say, okay, now, God, you show us where you were during the difficult time.
So, Jim, at real basic level, is this like just be in a good mood as you go back and revisit the bad stuff?
Well, it's deeper than the mood, because the mood is just about our feelings. This
okay.
is being in a good relationship, being held by someone who cares for you and holds you in their heart, you know.
Okay.
You know that this person would want to be with you regardless of anything. And so then you have Paul going on in the, about neither height nor depth nor nothing bad could separate me from God's love. I mean, he's sitting right in that golden moment, right?
Okay.
So at that moment, you could look at anything in life and say, that isn't going to separate me from God's love. It might be painful as all get out, but God's going to still love me.
All right, so let's go back to Kathmandu.
Right.
So this guy, now mm-hmm. this is where the bombing has taken place. Their
right.
loved ones, their kids, their parents have been killed. He gathers mm-hmm. them together, and he does what?
He basically, in 15 minutes, has them connect to their strongest memories of God's presence in their life. And then from that moment, he said, basically, if you are connected to God right now, and it turns out the entire group was, that's an important thing to remember, then ask God, what does he want you to know about the bombing? And he reveals where he was in the middle of that horrible event. Now, there's nothing that we can do to explain what happens at that point. I mean, we can describe what happens. Everyone in the group became peaceful.
Mm.
And from that point on, when they thought back on the bombing, they might still be sad, they might still have grief, but they were peaceful about it. Something about it said, no, that doesn't disconnect me from God. They were no longer traumatized.
Right.
They were suffering. And we have to make a big description. Suffering are painful things that we go through, but we keep acting like the person that God meant us to be. The church is always going to encounter suffering. There's no way you're going to get the pain out of life. This right. doesn't take the pain out of life. It just says that even though things are painful, I'm going to stay close to God. I'm going to love others. I'm going to keep doing the things that God meant for me to do. And, you know, for us, it's really easy to forget. Even when we have a headache or, you know, we get a bigger bill than we thought we were going to get from the power company, you know.
Right.
And we forget our relationships and to be caring. I mean, it's really easy to lose that sense of connection with God and others, and then we just, you know, really become hard to deal
okay,
with.
Okay, so wait a minute. I got to do a break here, but light okay. bulbs are clicking off.
Yeah.
So I've done a number of men's conferences mm-hmm. and men's retreats, and anyone who's gone on a retreat, you have the spiritual high up on the mountaintop, right?
Yeah.
You get down in the valley. This seems to tie into what you're talking about. Your relational circuits are on. You're aware of God's mm-hmm. presence. You're praying all the time. You're aware of God. And then, you know, 2 weeks go by, and I'm not there anymore. And
right.
so it's the same kind of thing. Or when our
kids take you back to those important moments,
right?
Yeah.
Or have a quiet time every morning, or a Bible study, or be with God as you start your day, and remind yourself of His presence. And then you get out of that pattern, and then pretty soon you're back to the routine. So a lot of this, I think a lot of people, if they've been around the block a little bit, have done this. And I want to say, wait a minute. Have you realized that this is something that those of us that have been parents or married a long time, we sort of know this, we've done this, but we haven't been aware that this is how the brain functions. The relational circuits are on out of appreciation and joy and God's presence. And then out of that strength and that good place, you can go back and revisit the bad stuff. I'm thinking of marriage counseling or just, you know, anytime couples have gone together, small group dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You remember why we love one another, why we got here. Now let's together out of that good place address the bad stuff.
And that's the importance of doing this as a fellowship, a family, a group. You see, we notice this about a really bad situation like Kathmandu and the bombing.
Right.
But we forget that all the little things in life are also knocking us out of those relational moments and connections. We're just continually forgetting that we're in relationship with God and others. And if we, as a body of fellowshipping people together, as a family, remember to go back and connect relationally with each other and with God, and then we'll talk about the problem, that would be that's just that
yeah.
little shift. You see, it's just a huge difference.
Well, and I think I got to do a break here. But, Jim, this is not something new. You've tapped into what has always worked throughout the past and just sort of worked on, structuring it better, analyzing and understanding a little bit better to where you can teach groups of people on how to do this better.
It's a strategic flow to the things that we've always known. So, I mean,
yes, thank
instead
you.
Of just throwing them all in the bucket and going, you shake this around and it'll come out, we say,
yes.
Well, do it in this order and you get a lot better yield at the other. It's just strategic and based very much on what the brain process looks like in terms of putting that sequence together. Then you look back at the Bible, you go, wow, this is all over the place.
Right.
But
right.
up until then, you didn't notice.
Well, and as you said, in the actual counseling sessions, this has been wildly effective, way more so, quote, than the older model.
Yes,
right?
Especially because we can now do this with groups, which you couldn't do with the older model.
Right. No, awesome. Quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Jim Wilder here on the Frank Pastore Show. The website for both the Heart and Soul Conference coming up at the end of June, as well as the dinner honoring Dallas Willard. Get more information at joy2thrive.com. Joy2thrive.com. Quick break. We'll be back with Dr. Jim. Show. My guest is Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist and neurotheologian. And if that's a new term for you, think of this. It's the intersection of spiritual formation and brain science. The brain science side is actually how do we process information? How do we strengthen relationships? I mean, all that stuff. Your soul interacts with the external world largely through your brain. You're not your brain, you're the thing that has the brain, but the brain, like any other organ, needs to be functioning properly, and it learns bad habits, etc. And it can also learn how to overcome those bad habits, but it's got to be intentional. And then spiritual formation is just wanting to be aware of God's presence all the time, is a nice, simple way of putting it. And how do you train yourself to be aware of God's presence all the time? Emmanuel, God with us, right? So how are you going to enter into an Emmanuel process 24/7 all the time, and especially acknowledging those things that derail or distract us through time, right? Like the guy that cuts you off on the freeway right now, or the bad day at the office, or you got in a fight with your spouse, or the kids got in trouble, or got in a fight. All the things that would typically derail you, how do you stay Emmanuel, God with us? And then how are you practicing spiritual formation? Remember one thing. Discipleship is not another thing to do. It's to acknowledge who you are. And you are made in God's image, and you've entered into a relationship with Christ. But there are things, disciplines, right, that disciples do to practice the awareness and the presence of God. So anyway, I don't want to get too heady on you guys, but this is just fascinating stuff to me. Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist and neurotheologian. So Jim, let's talk about, I think everyone gets an idea of what spiritual maturity looks like, but a new phrase or idea would be emotional maturity. What does that look like? What do you mean when you say that we are so busy, we don't have the skills to build emotional maturity anymore?
Well, emotional maturity is what comes out of being able to connect with other people meaningfully in a way that meets our needs and their needs pretty well. So you take your average infant, that little baby right there, and the baby doesn't know what they need. They scream and cry, and you got to figure it out for them.
Okay.
And, you know, and I was thinking about an older gentleman in my family. Whenever he has his meal, he sits around and he sort of grunts and makes unhappy noises, and his daughter and granddaughters all have to figure out what it is that he wants. You know, it's right. Just like, do you want the peas? Do you want this? And they keep running stuff to him until he finally quits grunting, you know. He's still operating like the infant who can't really even figure out for himself what it he wants. The child at least can ask for what they need. They know how to take care of themselves. And the child maturity is where most Americans live most of the time. I can take care of number one. I can take care of myself. And in fact, we work hard on getting better at taking care of one.
Okay.
But an adult maturity, which would be the next stage up, is where I can take care of you and me at the same time. So both of us end up being satisfied by what goes on. You know, I'm not taking advantage of you, you're not taking advantage of me. And that takes a lot of learning. See, if you don't know how to take care of one, you can't take care of two at the same time, right?
Right.
Then you end up, if you get up to a parent, you're trying to take care of children who don't know how to take care of themselves. So you have to really understand other people and fill in the blanks until they can learn to speak for themselves. And all the time, what keeps throwing this off is that we get upset, and they get upset. And in the middle of being upset, you have to keep that relationship. You know, that's where the trouble happens in relationships, don't you? It's when we get upset.
Right.
You know, so my wife's upset, my baby's upset, I'm upset at them, everybody's in a bad mood. Then we forget relationship because we haven't learned from the people around us who have enough maturity to say, you know, I'm really mad at you, but I still care about you very deeply, and I want this to work out right for us.
Right.
And if you don't hear that when you're talking to people, then you know that they don't have the maturity to be able to talk about, say, I'm really mad at you right now, but am I coming on too strong? Do I need you to give you just a moment to, catch your breath and think about what's really important to you right now? Because what I really want you to discover is what Jesus is trying to show us right now. He's right here with us. I'm aware of his presence. I'm ready. God's around us. This is where we ought to walk in this thing. But, you know, our brains are trained to look at whatever's in front of us and only think about that. That's your left brain, very unrelational. And so we're trying to rebuild that bond that's been just dropping out of society and say, let's teach people what it would mean if you had a Christian brain. Mm-hmm. You know, they remembered these relationships at the time that you were upset. That's relational maturity.
Okay, so I would think a lot of people believe this is going to just magically come upon them when they're dead and, quote, they're in heaven. That suddenly they'll be blessed with emotional maturity. They won't get angry. They won't get upset at anything anymore. Quote, they're in heaven. And I'm now having a new idea to where, wait a minute, if we're aware of this kind of dynamic and how the brain functions and spiritual formation, all that stuff on this side, mm-hmm. maybe we're to begin the process on this side so that we're just better at it when we arrive on the other side?
Well, I think that if we are going to experience and express to other people God's presence with them, God is one who wants to be with us even when we're upsetting him a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no question he doesn't like sin, right? But
right.
he still wants to be with us. And we're
right.
supposed to express that to other people. Now, if we haven't the skills to do that, we're not going to do a very good job of expressing God to other people. What we'll end up doing is talking a lot. And our talking part of our brain is typically very non-relational. It blames, it accuses, it judges, it evaluates, it does all sorts of things, but it doesn't say to you, you know what, for as mad as I am at you right now, I'm willing to forgive all of this and love you, and let's work out a solution together.
See, this is the maturity. I got to do another break, Jim, but there's, out of my own life experience, there's the Let's go to seminary and learn a bunch of Greek and Hebrew and Bible stuff and have
very good
knowledge.
Stuff.
Right. But what was lacking was the whole emotional maturity and spiritual health and spiritual maturity that goes along with it. This isn't learning more knowledge. It's skills of relationship and emotional maturity that you just said a minute ago.
Let me be very clear.
Yeah.
I say we need both. I'm
Absolutely.
Not saying we take one or the other, but just trying to do everything by willpower and more knowledge hasn't worked.
Right.
Just look around the church. It doesn't work. We need to be trained in how to love others.
Right.
That
Absolutely.
Also is, that's also something the church needs to pass on to other people.
Well, I'm thinking, again, I got to do a break. I'm thinking Jesus did this. He taught, and then you watched him how he lived and had relationships and had dinner and dealt with conflict and those kind of things. We're missing so much of having the modeling for us. And I'm thinking, if you want to be a better parent or a better friend, a better Christian, a better representative of Christ, and how to love people, and let alone love your enemy, you got to learn how to do this.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Wilder straight ahead.
In the words of a broken heart, it's just emotion that's taking me over.
You're having way too much fun. And so am I, and I hope you are too. Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. And this is when I want to do like a Vulcan mind meld with people and just like get it all into you, because I'm so impressed and I love this stuff. I was just telling Jim that, you know, in having gone and gotten 2 master's degrees in philosophy and all that and knowing my background, this was the missing component that I was looking for all those years. And it later became known as spiritual formation and all the Dallas Willard stuff. And that was huge. But still, there was one more step, which was really the intersection of spiritual formation with brain science. And it's how the brain actually responds to stimulus and remembers stuff and stores information and processes and blocks stuff and splits and all those things. And in fact, there's a conference coming up about all of this called the Heart and Soul Conference, June 27th to 29th at La Cañada Presbyterian Church. Tomorrow is the last day to sign up for both the conference as well as the very special dinner honoring Dallas Willard and his wife Jane. And that will be, get information at joytothrive.com. Again, tomorrow is the last day to sign up. Would love to see you there. So, Jim, there's so much I want to say, but let's bounce off of this, that it's the missing component thing. Because out of your own life experience, this isn't learning more. It's not another task item to go do. It's getting better at relationships, getting better at learning to heal ourselves, not by ourselves, but as the body of Christ, the way that God intended it to function.
Well, you know, Christianity for 200 years in America started with William Ames, who put the will at the top of everything. So if you had better will and better knowledge, that should solve whatever the problem is. And so we've thrown that at every problem we can think of. You know, just give you better information, that's education, right? Let's give you education, make better choices. Education, better choices. We have all of these Christian leaders who are extremely well-educated, trying to make good choices, and they have lousy, you know, joy in their life. The relationships just haven't come along to the same way. And you got to give them credit for trying as hard as you possibly can.
Right.
It's you know, you're just pushing this, and like you say, something else is missing. How do I learn to really relate to people in a way that has joy and connects with them and makes me go home just thinking, you know, I must be feeling the way Jesus feels right now. You know, that's the thing that we've been trying to discover. And again, what we've discovered is we got very few role models. There aren't a lot of people in the church that know how to do this. But whenever we can encounter Jesus in our own life, we get this glimmer of how he sees things.
Mm.
It's like when you see somebody that you can't stand, and when you're aware that Jesus loves them and he's seeing something that you can't see, something in you starts getting tugged on. You know, it starts looking like, all right, so I'm mad at you right now, but Jesus still loves you. What is going on with this?
Yes.
It's in that moment, you see, that something you can't do by willpower happens inside of you. We call it our heart melts, you know, something else, you know, you're filled with compassion, you're filled with peace. Something about you just changes because you're encountering a love, a power, or something bigger than you are. That's what this is all about. I mean, we need to learn how to do that. And the odd thing about the brain is it forgets those things as soon as it gets upset, unless you have practice doing it while you're upset. And that's all we're trying to teach the church to do. Now, okay, now you love people until they spill their coffee on your carpet, right? Up until then, you wanted them to come to church. Everything was great. But now they brought in their coffee. They spilled it on the carpet. They messed. You know how many church committee meetings went into selecting that carpet? And, you know, and all of a sudden, all the joy and all the love is like, right, sucked out of that room. Yeah.
Right.
And it isn't because you didn't want to keep loving them. You just don't know how to do it. You need somebody who walks up and goes, you know, I really love you and care, and would you help us clean up this carpet? Because, you know, this is an important part of being in church together. Oh, I didn't know. And, you know, but can you stay relational, you see? And we need those examples in our lives. We need to be able to share those examples. We need to be able to say to our kids, okay, now the kids at school were making fun of you. All right, you come home all upset, you know, they picked on you, whatever it is. No one in school likes you. All right, we need to say at that moment, well, you know, who was at school that liked them?
Mm.
Well, I think God was there and God likes them, right? They've clearly not been aware of that. And so to just be able to sit down with your kids and go, well, that was terrible. Here, just let me wrap my arms around you. Let's just take a deep breath and be quiet. And you know, well, let's think about those. You know, it's almost like, what are a few of your favorite things, you know?
Yes.
That kind of thing. The things that you appreciate, the gifts from God. Let me just remind you how much he loves you. And when we're connected, we're back with God again. Then let's go back and ask God, what do you want me to see about all those kids?
Well, and Jim, I want people to understand that you've had thousands of patients who have suffered childhood sexual abuse or massive trauma or just horrible yuck stuff. And what you're saying works. It helps people heal when they become aware of God's presence, starting in appreciation, moving into joy, and then with God's presence, revisiting these things and learning emotional maturity to go along with spiritual maturity.
Mm-hmm.
It's both of those. That's what you're all about. And it's not, hey, here, you know, come and get counseling from Jim Wilder. It's not. You're all about training the body of Christ and churches and leaders on how to do this.
Yeah, that's why we've closed our counseling office, because we really want to teach other people, how do you train the people around you to stay in relationship even when hard things happen? We call it suffering well. I mean, it's a phrase that's not going to catch on any kind of popularity, you know, but basically that's what happens. You know, the people who are very good at what they do can keep doing it even when it's painful, difficult. You know, we call them professionals. They suffer well. It isn't that it doesn't hurt. It isn't that it's not hard to do. I mean, I watch you run this all equipment in here, and you stay focused on the air because you know all this stuff, right? But it took training to get there.
It sure did.
And we're used to giving people training to learn how to read and study the Bible. But it's a whole new concept for the church to say we also need to teach them, how do you relate to people?
Yes.
Because it's just disappearing out of culture. You have to learn how to relate to people just the way you had to learn how to read, so that we can do that even when things are difficult.
Well, and I'm thinking with the increase, I got to go here, but I'm thinking with the increase in the number of fatherless families and the breakdown of the family, the next generation and the one following that is going to be even worse at relationships than we are. With all the technological advancements that we've had, we need to know how to do relationships well, so that when you're a mature Christian, quote, spiritually mature, you're also emotionally and relationally mature, and your life expresses a lot of joy despite the circumstances that you're in. The conference is called the Heart and Soul Conference, June 27th to the 29th at La Cañada Presbyterian Church, and also the special dinner honoring Dallas and Jane Willard on Thursday evening, June 28th. You can get information for both events. Tomorrow's the last day to sign up.
It's an amazing gathering. I really want to see you there.
Well,
and come up and greet me.
And I'm really looking forward to it as well. The website is joy2thrive.com. That's joy2thrive.com.